feed us information. Lord, sometimes we're not sure we can assimilate all of it, but we know, Lord, that even if we can just take one or two things and pray about those, that you can work those into our lives. And Lord, thank you today that you don't expect us to take everything and absorb it all at once. Lord, it's just not possible to do that. But I pray today, Lord, that at least one thing would speak to each of us here, including myself. And we pray that our hearts would be open and teachable, and that you might be able to say anything you want to us without us backing off. Thank you, Lord, that you have given us the men that you've given us. And we pray that we'd better understand them and that we'd better understand ourselves and our need for you as a result of this time together today. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, I'm Jerry White, and I know some of you. Some of you I don't know, but I'm really glad we can have this time together. By the way, I tried to find you this noon. Somehow we missed connections. I'm sorry about that. I hope so. Okay, the title of this is Being the Wife of a Disciple Maker. And how many of you in this room are married to men who are in full-time in the ministry? That is interesting. Mm-hmm. So you're all married to men who have a full-time job and then they're doing ministry too. And I think that is really neat. I really have an appreciation for that. And I think for you too, because you're willing to, it's kind of like going the extra mile. And I know that God probably is blessing you in your lives in many ways. I think all of you, you're kind of a unique group of women because you've been involved in this ministry, whatever your ministry is, with your husband, long enough to have some questions and to know what the problems are and maybe to have a few answers and some answers that you don't have that you'd like to have. So today I'd like you just to feel free at any point if you want to interject something or ask a question, just go like that. Will you do that? And don't be shy, because we're not going to hopefully be formal. I don't mean to be formal. I want you to feel free just to enter in to this so that it's not just a lecture. We're all still, if you're like me, you're still groping and growing as you go along. And you just learn one thing from the Lord, and then he brings something new into your life that you have to reevaluate and learn from and adjust to. And sometimes you think you've had enough to cope with, and God will trust you with one more thing, like he did Myrna last October with her automobile accident. And when I heard of that, my first impulse humanly was, Lord, Myrna doesn't need this. Myrna's gone through a lot more than I've ever gone through. But I think God also has really trusted them as a couple, and he's found them faithful, and I'm really, you know, I'm proud to be around them and to have them as friends. But God is constantly training us, teaching us to go deeper in our lives. And anything that we do, any progress that we make, God is very quick to affirm us and to take note of it. I remember A.W. Tozer in one of his books made a statement. He said, God is easy to please, but hard to satisfy. And when I first heard that, I thought, now wait a minute, that sounds negative, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized, yeah, that's right. He is very easy to please. He's like a proud parent who is bursting with pride over this child of his, and quick to affirm us and to take note of every little thing we do, no matter how small it is. But at the same time, he wants to conform us to the image of Christ, and that means that there's no stopping point, doesn't it? As long as we're here in this world, that God will be entrusting us with situations that will build in humility and brokenness and character into our lives. It makes us a special kind of woman, not because in ourselves we're special, but because when we allow him to do that in our lives, he sets us apart and gives us special attention. And I just think of Cindy and some of the hard things she's been through the miscarriage, and how God has entrusted her to go through something hard, something that's not easy, and something that you feel angry at times. Don't you feel that way sometimes when you go through something difficult? And Sylvia's been through that too this year. And there are those feelings, and God understands that. He knows that. And our feelings are not wrong. if they become attitudes and set patterns in our lives, then that's wrong. But God understands that. He understands those feelings of anger and frustration, and He understands the tears. He even puts them in a bottle. It's kind of neat, isn't it? Yes. Okay. So God is if it takes time and battles to build generals, it takes time and battles to build women who want to walk with God too and who want to be His special children. Okay, I thought we would start today. The outline today will be, the first part will be the demands on our husbands. And the reason for that is just to kind of refresh our minds on the weight of responsibility that they carry for us, so that in being reminded of that, there is a sense of gratitude and appreciation that can keep coming from us toward them. If you lose sight of that, if you lose sight of what the responsibilities that they carry, then you can become very me-centered, can't you? You just think how things are hitting you and affecting you, and there's a tendency to blame and to not appreciate. So I thought it might be good for us just to cover that. And then the second part will be the demands on the wife. And we'll have fun with that one. There's lots to lots to talk about there. And then the third part is communication with your husband. And then the fourth one has to do with the challenge the challenge of being a disciple maker's wife. Okay. The demands on a husband. I had four thoughts here. It doesn't mean that that's exhaustive. It certainly isn't. But it's just to trigger our thinking and to get us going here. But one thing, one demand on our husbands is the time pressure in their devotional life. And there are certainly, especially you women married, those of all of you in here married to men who have a full-time job, and then during the odd hours they work in a ministry, plus they have to work in family time with you and the children, and plus any date time, and if relatives come to visit, well, I mean, it goes on and on, doesn't it? There's really no end to it. And just the time pressure they feel, and then keeping their devotional life balanced with this. And I know it's a challenge for me and you too, just to pray that God will help us to be an encouragement to our husbands. I don't know if you all can see or not in this. And there will be ways where we can be sensitive to them, maybe to not bring up certain subjects at certain times, and not to ask certain things of them if we know they're under a particular pressure at that time. Just developing a sensitive spirit. Kind of like Ecclesiastes 8:5, where it says woman. A wise woman's heart discerns both timing and procedure. There's a right way and then there's a right time to bring up something. And just to ask God to help us to be sensitive on that, because they do carry a heavy responsibility. Yes. Ecclesiastes 8:5. And when our husband's devotional life gets out of whack with the pressures, the time pressures in his life, the responsibilities, then we have an imbalance like we have right here. And when that happens, then you'll see things in your husband's life which you probably already have. Maybe a brittleness and impatience, and maybe depression, depending on their temperament. But there will be things like that that will crop up. And so we need to pray for them in this way, that God will help them to keep a balance in their lives. Okay. Leroy Ames made a remark once that I never have been able to forget. And he said, "When I neglect the Word, I'm not able to think as clearly or as quickly. And when I neglect prayer in my life, I become critical and brittle." And I thought, that is true, isn't it? When I think about my own life, I can really pin it down to those two concepts, that if I neglect God's Word, then my thinking is fuzzy. I don't see from His perspective because I'm not reading His thoughts in the Bible. I'm not in touch with His thinking, so therefore I'm limited to this right here, what I can come up with. And when I'm not spending time in prayer, then there tends to be almost a hardness that sets in. We become critical and brittle. We're more impatient with other people. We're more quick to judge. We're more quick to imply wrong motives and things like that. So we need to help our husbands and pray for them that they can keep that balance. And then the second thing, pressure that our husbands feel, is just the final responsibility. Have you ever been in a position to where you feel you have final responsibility on a job? Maybe you've supervised other people and the buck stops with you and you know that feeling. Then, you know, I think it's good for us to stop and remember that our husbands feel that pressure as the head of the home. As our husbands, they feel a responsibility for our morale, for our walk with God. This is their responsibility, their God-given responsibility. They need to be a lifter, and they know it. They need to, like Ephesians 5 says, to love their wives as Christ loved the church. That's a big order, isn't it? And it's something that they have to grow into. And like Ephesians 6:4 says, to not exasperate the children. And that verse refers particularly to fathers. It doesn't mention the mother. It does mention the father. And so they feel a responsibility for the morale in the home. And then they feel a responsibility for finances in the home. If the money is short, they feel that. They feel a responsibility for wise decisions that are made with the money that is available. By the way, I don't know how many of you have budgets. Maybe you all do, but if you don't, it's sure a good idea. It really helps me to know what I've got to work with. And if I know I have only so much money budgeted for clothes, then I know when to say no to myself. Otherwise, I don't have that check and balance there to keep me in line. So it helps me to have a budget. We did this several years ago. We set up about 10 categories in a 3-ring binder. And we put little tabs for each one. There's utilities, and there's food, and there's gifts, and there's petty cash, and you know, there's all these different categories, car and so forth. And we decided how much to put in each category, and then we kind of had to play around with it until we got the right balance. But then when we did, it really helped us to be able to do that. And then they feel final responsibility in the marriage relationship, being sure that they get enough time, our husbands get enough time with us as their wives, dates and so forth. And Ephesians 5, 23, 25, and 28 goes into that. We won't stop to read that now. And then they feel a responsibility to be a role model. And that, again, is a heavy responsibility. Jim heard a program on the radio several months ago now, a Christian radio broadcast, and they said in that program that the mother has more influence on the children except in one area, and there the father had more influence on the children, and that was having to do with spiritual things, good or bad. If the father didn't like to go to church, if the father was not interested in spiritual things, then that greatly influenced the children in that direction. And I can look in my own family and relatives, I can see where it's worked out that way, that the children are greatly influenced by their fathers spiritually. And then the father realizes he has to be a role model, because children's feelings toward God are a reflection of their feelings toward their own fathers. I read a book, I don't know if you've heard of this book, it's called A Father, A Son, and a 10-Mile Run. And it's a wonderful book. It's very heartwarming and inspiring. And the father writes about his relationship with the son in this book. The father is a judge. And he said in one part of the book that he had to deal at one time in his life with boys from a correctional institution. And he said in dealing with these boys, he would try to tell them about God and use the term God our Father. And he said those boys couldn't handle that term. He says it would make them angry, because the only model of a father they had was their own father, and that's why they were where they were, because of an inadequate model. And he said it took a long time of working with them, and he said what it took was him and some other men working on this project to become role models for these boys, to demonstrate to them how a father could be loving and kind and accepting and affirming and all these things. And then when these boys came to understand that, then they could transfer that to God being a loving Heavenly Father. But it was just interesting to me how necessary a role model is and what a difference it makes. Our youngest son, Jimmy, is 15 now, but I remember when he was, I guess he was about 7 years old, and at that time in his life, he must have been younger, 5 or 6, somewhere in there. And at that time in his life, it was very important to him to do everything like Jim did it, like Daddy did it. He just wanted to copy him. And he came to me one day and he says, "Mom, you know that blue bathrobe Dad has?" And I said, "Yes, the one with the pocket." And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Can you make me one just like it?" And he says, "I want a pocket right where Dad's is." So I went and got the same, similar material and a pattern, and I made a bathrobe for him just like Jim's. And then he says, "One more thing." He says, "You know how Dad always wears his handkerchief just in his pocket so that some of it sticks up on top?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Can I have one of his hankies to wear?" So we went and got one of Jim's handkerchiefs and put it in his pocket, and he strutted around in that. He was so proud of it and wore it for a long time. And I thought to myself, you know, Jim is being watched. He is a role model. Like it or not, you're a role model, aren't you? And I went by his room shortly after that one day, and he was walking around in circles in the room, and he had his Bible open in his hands. He was just walking around and around, and he was saying God and Jesus over and over, just God, Jesus, God, Jesus, and walking around. I thought, what on earth is this kid doing? And I said, "Jimmy, what are you doing?" And he says, "I'm having my quiet time."
Oh.
And I said, "Oh, what do you do when you have your quiet time?" And he said, "Well, I just walk around and around the room, and I say God and Jesus about 1,000 times each." And but he had seen Jim walk around his room with his Bible open. Jim always likes to walk when he prays. So he'll walk around with an open Bible, and Jimmy had seen him do that. So he thought, that's what you do. He was watching. Jim didn't know he was being watched, but he was. Then they feel the demands of ministry expectations. A busy day at the office and then ministry at night and on the weekend sometimes. And what do they do when the man they've invested months in caves in, their key man caves in? That's a heavy, heavy, isn't it? It's heavy to bear. And it's one more demand that they feel, just the demands of the ministry. And when statistics don't look as good as you wish they looked or as they wish they looked. And here again, we have to learn to leave those things with God. But these are pressures that we feel. We feel like they feel like they have poured their lives into people. And then sometimes they don't feel like there has been the results that there should be. And God has very special lessons to teach in that too. So it's not without a purpose, but it is still a felt responsibility. Okay, let's talk a little bit now about just the demands on the wife. I don't know how you feel, but over the years, I've often felt like the snake in this picture. He says, "I think I have overextended myself." He's going from one branch way over to another, and he's barely making it, probably won't make it. And sometimes we get that feeling, don't we? We feel like we've overextended ourselves. And there's the feeling, I don't know if you yet have gone through this, or maybe many times, but many times over the years I have felt like I've gone to bed at night with a do list of 10 things on it, and I only got 5 done. So I take the 5 and transfer them to the next day, and I just keep carrying over. And I know for a long time I'd go to bed at night and I'd think, I just never catch up. I just never get on top of this. And it was discouraging to me. And there was just always more to do than I felt I could do. Well, see, God had some things to teach me in that. He had to teaching me in that to have balance in my life. So the demands on the wife. One of the demands that we'll talk about now is multiple and complex responsibilities. And there are a bunch of these. This is the one I told you we'd have fun with. Because we could go on and on, couldn't we? There are things on this list that I'm going to mention that you're going to think of other things. This is by no means exhaustive. And if you want to interject something, just raise your hand and do so. One of the complex responsibilities that we feel is Bible studies. The lady down the block doesn't have to do that, doesn't get to do that. She has a more simplified life. But we have to plan extra time in our week for the preparation of Bible study. And then how about the meetings in and out of the home? This takes time. It takes extra preparation, extra energy. These are all things that we feel. And then there's the whole area of children and the complex demands and responsibilities that we feel in that area. Their activities at school, their gymnastics meets and soccer games and church activities and whatever they are. And we find ourselves running. We find ourselves chauffeuring constantly. We feel like we were born in a car and we wonder if we'll ever get out of it. But to try and keep perspective in all of this, too, is a challenge. And then the training of the children, the conscious training and the unconscious training. The conscious training are the things that we set out purposely to get across to them. And things like learning to pick up their clothes and learning to make their beds and things like that. Learning to help with the dishes. When our daughter was a little girl, she discovered how to not ever have to make her bed. I just stood there amazed. One morning I looked in her room, and there she was. She was slithering out the top of the bed like a snake, just like that. Then she got out and she just went pat and walked out the room. And that was it. And then at night when she'd go to get in bed, she'd do the same thing backwards. She'd slither in from the top, wiggle. It'd take her 2 or 3 minutes to do it, you know, and she'd finally get in her bed. And I said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "I hate to make beds, Mother." And so what could I say? The bed looked fine. But anyway, it was really funny, and I couldn't help but laugh. Later, she became very neat in her keeping up her room. But it took a while. It takes a while, doesn't it? They don't learn those things overnight. And a way of unconscious training can be through the looks on our faces, the way we react to circumstances and people around us. The things that we say, maybe a critical remark here and there, and the children pick up from that. We know of one, well, he's an adult now, he's in his early 30s, but when he was in high school, he just completely turned off on spiritual things. He didn't want anything to do with them. And years later, when he came back to the Lord, Jim was talking to him, and he said, what made you turn off on spiritual things? What made you just give the whole thing up? And he said, well, and he asked Jim to keep this in confidence, which we have, but he said, my folks used to be around the dinner table. They'd be critical of certain people in the organization where they worked. This is a Christian organization. And he said, I listened to this for a while, and he says, finally, I realized that, hey, I thought this was a neat organization, and if these people can't make it, there's certainly no hope for me. And I thought, wow. You know, sometimes we think, well, they're innocent little remarks that we're making, but we mention this fault with this person and that with that, and they hear that, and it discourages them. They can't handle that sort of thing. So that is an unconscious kind of training that we don't want, isn't it? We don't want to be doing that. There were two things that I remember, not that there were only two, but two that we'll talk about now. In my own life that I did as an unconscious training of my children for a while until God got my attention. One was that I found myself, especially with Jimmy, I think I did it with the older two also, but I would find myself saying, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And the reason I would do that was because I had more things on my do list than God meant to be on that do list. I had just added, you know, God knows that we can only do so much, and then we add all these other things. And we think we're doing them for God. And I can just imagine God standing there saying, now, wait a minute. I didn't give you that to do. You're running around exhausted, and you're not doing what I told you to do. You're adding to it. And that's what I was doing. So I was being impatient with the children, and I was trying to make them hurry up and fit into my busy lifestyle. And that was not fair. And it certainly was not a picture to them of a peaceful walk with God that they should have been seeing in their mother at that time. Another thing I found myself doing in the way of unconscious training was saying, we can't afford this, or we can't afford that. As though, you know, God had just run out of pocket change, and, you know, we're going to have to come up with plan B. And God got my attention on that one day. I don't remember how, but I began to think about that, and I thought, wait a minute, that isn't the issue, that we don't have money for it. Because you can pray, and if God knows it's a legitimate need, don't we have an all-powerful God? Isn't He able to supply? And so I began to realize that the issue was not that we couldn't afford it. And then I began to tell the children, if God, we can pray about it. If God wants us to have this, then He'll provide it for us. If He knows we really don't need it, He can say no, and we won't argue with that. But pray that God will bring to your attention any unconscious training that you may be doing and you're not aware that you're doing in your life. Amy, you can get the jump on us there because you don't have children yet. You can be better prepared than I was. And then just object lessons. We feel the responsibility here demands to train these children that God has given us. We feel a responsibility to help them see, just as they go through life, that to make the Bible live to them. Not just to read them Bible stories, but to be able to make it make sense to them. And I began to pray about this. I didn't begin to pray about it until we had our third child, and then I became very conscious of it. And God began to answer. When I prayed, He began to answer and show me things just as time would go by. Not necessarily every day, but something would happen, and I would say, oh, there's an opportunity to get across the truth. Not preach a sermon, but just to, in a casual way, just to relate that to the child and help them to see God in everyday life. And in fact, just the other day, about 3 days ago, I was spending some time, Jimmy and I were sitting at the kitchen table talking. He's 15 now. And I was telling him some things about one of my relatives that to help explain to him certain behavior. So I was going into the person's background and saying, Jimmy, the reason this happens is because of he never had a role model, never had a father to be a role model for him. And we talked about that, and then I said, because of certain things that happened, it's very hard for this person to take advice. Nobody can correct him. Nobody can give him advice. He takes it personally and is wounded if they try to. And I said, honey, the sad thing about it is that when we let those patterns develop in our lives, there's so much that we never learn. We go through life kind of closed off. We only learn this narrow spectrum of what we choose to learn, and all of this out here is lost. And he said, well, Mom, he said, I can really see that. And he says, I can also see that if we're that way, that we'll never learn humility in our lives. I said, honey, that's right. And we talked about that. But I mean, just take just opportunities. They're demands on our time. They demand something of us. They demand not getting that extra thing done in the kitchen and just sitting down at the table and saying to yourself, wait a minute, He is more important than whether I bake that cake or not. He is important. This is a lifetime project here. A cake isn't. It's a people, not a thing. And just taking the time to do that building there. And then just teaching our children how to handle relationships, teaching them how to handle money wisely. Character building, taking the time to build character in their lives when you catch them in a lie. By the way, pray that you will catch your children. It really works. God is very gracious to answer that prayer most of the time. I don't know that He does every single time, but I think He is very gracious to answer that most of the time. And I could tell you all kinds of funny stories on that one, but I won't. Then the next thing under the multiple complex relationships is the upkeep and the management of the home. This is a responsibility that we feel very keenly. I hope you don't feel like your home can never be out of order. I hope you're not so tense on this that you can't take life as it comes. I like a neat home. I've always liked a neat home. I like things picked up and clean and so forth. But I don't always have a place for everything and everything in its place. I'm not saying I'm proud of that. I'm just saying that I've had to struggle with that. My husband is the kind of a person that he is very orderly, and he likes to know exactly what drawer something is in. And I guess the way I'm put together from my background is I'll put something in a drawer, and I'll think, boy, this is so logical. I'll never forget this. And then a week later, I go to look for it, and I haven't the faintest idea where I put that. Somehow the logic just fizzled out, and I look in 10 places before I finally find it. And so we are different. We're going to be different. Jim and I are very different. He's more of a perfectionist, and I'm more laid back than that. And so you have to work. You have to work with each other on those things. You have to be patient and tolerant with each other. And at the same time, not to fall into the attitude, well, this is just me, and I'm not going to change. I'm just like this. See, because then God can't teach you anything. There has to be an openness there, a willingness to change and to grow, and at the same time, a willingness to be tolerant with the person on that issue, too. Your husband with you and you with him.
Jerry,
yes?
I have problems with being the perfectionist.
So it's turned around in your family.
To the point that it was driving the family out of the house.
Uh-huh.
And I said, okay, God, you show me when you want something put away, washed, you know, those extra things. It's really working, and it'll work the opposite also for those that are having problems doing it.
That's good, Myrna.
Ask God to show you. That has really helped.
That is great. Thank you. That's a sensitivity, isn't it, that we were talking about earlier, just being sensitive to God on these things. Okay, and then there's, we mentioned a budget, and then there's the menus and the do lists. And 1 Corinthians 14:40 says, let all things be done decently and in order. I don't think that means we have to be a perfectionist, but I think to have enough order in our lives that it does not confuse the people around us and doesn't frustrate them, I think that is something that God would be pleased with. Okay, then the last thing here under this topic is the devotional life. And to me, this is the most important of all, because if your relationship with God is not right, it will not be right with your husband. It just has to be that way. We've got to keep in close touch with God. And I find that if I go through a phase where my devotional life isn't what it should be, I can usually trace it to at least four things. I'm just going to mention four things today. There are others, too, that can crop up. But one is my view of God. How do I see God? Do I see Him as austere and demanding and expecting more than I'm able to deliver? How do I look at Him? If my view of God is off, it's very hard for me to feel warm feelings toward Him. Isn't it for you? There's a distance there. There's something wrong. J.I. Packer said in I can't even remember the name of his book, but he said that our view of God is at the root of most of our problems. And I really think that's true. It may not be at the root of all of them, but I really think that it's pretty safe to say that an inadequate view of God is the root of most of our problems. And if we're fretting over finances or the way we're being neglected or whatever it is, what the bottom line of that is God is not able to provide for me. God really doesn't care about me. And when Satan made his first attack on the human race, it was through Eve, and he attacked God's kindness, God's goodness with her. And to lead Eve to believe that God has purposely withheld this thing from you because he knows what that would do for you. He knows how that would help you. See, it's an attack on his goodness and his kindness. So, and then in the devotional life, to every day be sure that I'm judging myself. Confession of sin. Not that we're on a witch hunt to try and dig up some sin every day to confess. I don't have to dig them up. They're there. But just to have a sensitivity like Myrna was talking about, and to have an openness to where God can just tap you on the shoulder. Doesn't have to hit you on the head with a baseball bat to get your attention. And I think if we live every day with a spirit of being willing to judge ourselves when something comes up, then God can deal with us very easily. I can remember where one area of my life where God helped me in this. I used to have a terrible habit of making excuses for myself. And I never could give the right reason for anything. And if I went to the mall and I got the car back late, so Jim was waiting on me, I was 10 or 15 minutes late, then I would always say something like, honey, you wouldn't believe the traffic. It was awful. I would have been here on time, but I couldn't come out and say the real reason was because I was having such a good time that I chose not to leave soon enough. I couldn't say that. See, I should have. And finally, one day, I went to Jim and I said, you know, I've had this problem a long time of making excuses for myself. And I said, I guess I'm never going to get over this unless God really helps me with it. And I said, do you have any suggestions? And he said, well, yes. He said, the next time an opportunity comes up for you to make an excuse for yourself, he said, ask God to help you to see the blinking yellow light. You know, when you go through an intersection, that blinking yellow light says, caution, stop, take note, something's about to happen here. And so he said, just pay attention to that. You ask God to show you that blinking yellow light. And when he does, just stop and judge yourself and say, now, Lord, help me to say this the way it really is. And he says, you'll miss. He said, there will probably be several times where you'll do it wrong. But if after you do it wrong, if you'll come back and say, I'm sorry, what I really should have said, this was the real reason. And then you state that. And I began to do that. And God began to really help me with that. And it was like Jim said. He said, when you begin doing it right, he says, then God will help you in time to catch it ahead of time, to where you won't have to be apologizing afterwards. And that's exactly what God did. He really helped me on that. But I had to come to a point where I'd call it sin and let God deal with it. And then in the devotional life, there's worship, which includes thanksgiving and praise. You know, it's very hard to be bitter and resentful and to be a thankful, praising person at the same time. I don't think it's possible. It's kind of like the book of James says, that can a fountain send forth sweet and bitter water at the same time? And the answer is very obvious, no, it's not possible. And I've prayed in my own life that God would give me a thankful, praising heart. It's hard to have that when you're going through a very trying problem, though, isn't it? And sometimes you have to do it by faith. You have to say, Lord, I don't feel like praising you, but I'm going to do it. Lord, I don't feel thankful in my heart, but I want to thank you for all the things that have gone right, and not to dwell so much on the things that haven't, and to just to develop that. And then accountability, especially with your husband, too. In keeping your devotional life in balance, to have an accountability relationship to where he can say to you, do you see anything in my life that you think is a slow curve in the wrong direction? Do you see anything that you think that I may be blind to? And then you to say that to him. Jim and I do this every once in a while. We'll ask each other that. Is there anything in my life these days that you see as a danger signal? And to have that open relationship. Okay, then communication with our husband. And we'll just talk briefly about three things here. The first one is balancing submission with honesty. In Ephesians 5:22, it tells us to be submissive to our husbands. We're all familiar with that verse. But what does this mean? Does this mean that we squelch our feelings? That we agree with them on everything? I don't think that that's what that means personally. I know Jim wants me to express my feelings. He doesn't want me to squelch him. But he doesn't expect me necessarily to agree with him on everything. It doesn't mean you have to have a big argument when you don't agree. But there needs to be this freedom with each other, that sometimes you aren't going to agree. And you all probably have heard the statement that Ruth Graham made several years ago, that if she and Billy agreed on everything, that one of them would be unnecessary. And that's always kind of humored me. And we don't. We agree on most things, but occasionally there's something that we don't agree on. And then we talk it out and try to understand where each other's coming from. And sometimes it comes down to Jim making a decision that I may not agree with, like the car set that he bought for Jimmy for Christmas that he was too young to have. And then I just said, okay, Lord, it's in your hands. And then God takes care of it. In that particular situation, he went ahead and bought the car set for Jimmy, and I felt like it was wrong. I expressed myself, And he still felt like Jimmy could handle it at that age, so he bought it for him. And sure enough, it got broke two or three times, fixed and broken, and it finally went back in the box up on the closet shelf, and there it stayed for 2 months. And I wanted in my heart so badly to say, "I told you so." I wanted to say that. You know, that's what we're like, isn't it? We just want to say that. And but I didn't. I thought, no, I'm not going to say anything. And finally, after a couple of months, one day, Jim said, "You know that car set that we bought for Jimmy for Christmas?" And I said, "Yes." And he says, "Well," he said, "you were right. He really wasn't ready for that." He says, "I'm sorry that I spent that money on that because it was a waste of money." And I said, "Well, that's all right, honey. I've made a lot of mistakes, too. You know, you've had to overlook mistakes that I've made, too." And he said, "By the way, thanks for not saying I told you so." And I said, "Thanks, Lord, for helping me not to say it." As I sure wanted to. And then the second thing, staying best friends with our husbands. Fun dates, just getting some time off together, if you have children, away from the children, or even if you don't, just to take the time to get some time away together. This may sound strange to some of you, but I think it's kind of a clever idea. A friend of mine, every once in a while, kidnaps her husband. And what she does is she'll phone him and she'll say, "Honey, when do you have some time where you could clear your schedule, like an afternoon?" And he'll tell her. And she'll say, "I'll pick you up at the office at 12. And she says, "I'm not telling you where we're going. It'll be a surprise." And so she plans everything out, and she kidnaps him, quote unquote, and picks him up at the office, and they go and do whatever she's planned and have a great time together. And it's kind of the element of surprise that adds freshness to your marriage, not always doing everything the same way and getting into ruts. And she also, for her children and her husband, occasionally she'll give them a coupon, either maybe at a birthday time or maybe just any time. And it'll say something like, she'll make it up. She'll get a piece of paper and she'll get a pen and she'll write out on the top "coupon." And then she'll write, "I owe you one back rub anytime between February 1st and 15th," or whatever, you know, be as creative as you want to be. And she'll give that to them, and it's really a fun thing for their family. I've done that one, and it really goes over big. It's a lot of fun. It doesn't have to be a back rub. It can be whatever you want it to be. And then just to get times away, if you're blessed enough to have someone living around you who has the vision to help take care of your children occasionally so you can get away, just consider yourself very fortunate. That is a blessing. And may God bless the person that does that. Oh, in a special way. But I know when Jim and I get times away, whether it's a 3-day getaway or 5 or whatever it is, when we get times away, I find myself unwinding. Even as we're driving away in the car, it's almost like I don't have to answer a ringing phone. I don't have to throw one more load of laundry in the washer. And I don't have to start preparing dinner. I can eat out. But it's just being able to get yourself, get away so that you can relax and enjoy each other more. It really will enhance your marriage relationship too. And that's important. Then the challenge of being a disciple maker's wife. First thing is turning difficult circumstances into strength of character. And this is a challenge, isn't it? Because there will be times when we're misunderstood from others regarding our role. Maybe you have more garbage cans in your driveway than everyone else on the block, or maybe the people coming in and out of your home and all the cars parked in the front makes other people wonder what kind of a strange person you are, and you feel the distance in that, and you can feel a sense of rejection, a sense of being misunderstood for the role that God has asked you to carry out. But just to remember that what God asks us to do, we can do with our head up, and we can do it with a sense of the right kind of pride and with a sense of a high calling, because He's given us personally this job to do, and it's an honor. 1 Peter 2:23 says, "For us to commit ourselves to Him who judges righteously." So when we're judged by others, to not let that throw us, but to remember that God is the judge. He is the one that we're to be pleasing. We have the pressure of just the society in which we live, that tries to make us feel like third-class citizens because we've decided to be mothers and stay home and put first things first in our lives. And that can cause us to kind of feel out of step with the people around us. But it is a pressure that we have to be willing to carry and to carry it gratefully. I was in a restaurant not too long ago, and in the table right by ours were two couples. And they were sitting there, and they were having the best time just running down housewives and really making jokes about them. And here I was, a homemaker, a housewife, sitting there listening to this. And my first feeling was one of anger. I thought, I won't tell you what I thought. You people, you don't know what's important in life. And I felt myself getting angry, and then I thought, I need to pray for them. I need to turn this anger into prayer. So I did stop, and in my heart I said, Lord, they're not Christians. They don't know you. They don't know your value system. They're missing everything in life that's important, and I've got it. Thank you. And I pray for them. I pray that, like Acts 26:18 says, that you'll open their eyes and turn them from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan to Christ. And then I felt just a peace. You know, I could accept that then. And then the third thing is the busyness of the husband and a lack of appreciation from children. And we might as well be honest. We are going to sense this. There are going to be times when you are frustrated that your husband is so busy, and you feel a resentment in your heart over that. That is normal. Those are normal feelings. Now, how you deal with your feelings is another thing. Feelings are normal, but if they develop into attitudes, then we do have a problem. Then it becomes sin if it's a wrong attitude. But God understands our feelings. And there are times, there have been times where, I know Jim's travel has frustrated me at times, and it's put extra pressure on me. And as a result, it's been a stretching time, too. God has helped me to learn some things through that and helped me to grow through that. And there have been times where I have felt a lack of appreciation from our children, I think especially in junior high, from the older two. I felt this. I thought, did God create junior high children? The things they go through, you know, they're doing all these obnoxious things and making all these obnoxious noises and saying these kind of things that are offensive, and you're having to deal with all that. And then just feeling often a sense of rejection and a lack of appreciation. I remember one day as I was putting laundry in the washing machine, I was standing there and I thought, the only thing I'm needed for around here is to do the laundry and put the food on the table. And I was on a pity party. I was really feeling sorry for myself. But just to encourage you that don't lose perspective, that keep remembering that as you serve and you give and you do these things that the world doesn't understand but God does, that the day will come when God will, you'll see the reward of that. And I know it was a few years after that, that I'd made that statement one day, that Rodney gave me a Mother's Day card. And on the card he said, Dear Mom, I know I don't really tell you how I feel, but he said, I want you to know that I see all you do for me. And he says, I've been thinking a lot about it. And he says, here are six of the things that I've noticed lately. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I read that through tears that were running down my cheeks. I just looked up and I thought, Lord, thanks. I needed that. But the reward does come when we're doing what God asks us to do and we're trying to keep our attitudes in check, then God will reward us for that. The blessings will come, and I'll tell you, there have been many that have come through the three children. God has rewarded it. And yet there are the hard times when you wonder if anything good is going to come out of that home. And you look down the block and you think, oh, that neighbor kid looks better than mine, and they're not even Christians. And, you know, you have these struggles, these things that you struggle with inside. But to remember that God is in control, and when we claim the promises of God for our husbands and our children, God does not turn a deaf ear to that. He hears it. And the last thing, I think we're just about out of time, so we'll have to go through this quickly, but is God's evaluation of you, or what God thinks of you. And the reason I wanted to end on this is because I just want you to be encouraged that the very fact that you love God and that you want to please Him and that you've married men that want to please Him means that God thinks very highly of you. You're very special to Him. And I was reading Proverb 31, and I marked about 7 verses there. Let me just give you the verses. Verse 10, 11, 23, 28, 29, 30, and 31. And this is what God thinks of you. Number 10, it says you're a good wife. Number 11, it says your husband will trust you. Number 23 says your character will bring honor to your husband. And you know, that is true. I think when we are being the kind of wives that our husbands want us to be and God wants us to be and our hearts are right, that it does affect our husband, that he becomes a more honored person because we're affecting his life, we're supporting him, and we're having an effect on what others think of him too. Number 28, your children and your husband will praise you. And that's true. That's one of the benefits, one of the big benefits. Number 29, you're going to like this one. You're way out ahead of most women. Not that we're trying to compare ourselves, you know, like 2 Corinthians 10:12 says, but that God says this, that we are. It's right here in the Bible, in verse 29, that we really are out ahead of most women because we're doing things God's way. And then verse 30, it says, your God-fearing ways will bring you much praise and admiration. And that is true. There is an honor that God gives. 31, your work is not in vain. Do remember that. Me too. Your godly character has won you a fine reputation. Isn't that neat? That's what verse 31 says. A fine reputation, that is something to be treasured. Okay, let's just, before we close, let me just ask you, does anyone have anything you'd like to add? Like to say? No, that was Proverb 31. Proverb 31, Did you get the verses? Okay. By the way, one thing I forgot to add when I was on the devotional life, and I really wanted to show it to you, and I forgot about it. I ran across this a few months ago, and I thought, that is so true. Something to remember when you're tempted to not give time to the Lord. Can you see that? When facing a pressured day, save precious time by skipping devotions, signed Satan. Kind of be good to tack on your wall, wouldn't it? Or your kitchen sink. Okay, well, let's just close with a word of prayer.